Kia ora, hello and welcome to today's Weber Training Telecast Lecture. My name is Jane Barnett and it gives me great pleasure to introduce this Weber Training South Pacific Telecast. I'm delighted to welcome Ruth Barrett, who's our speaker today and is speaking to us from Christchurch, New Zealand. Ruth is a clinical nurse specialist in infection prevention and control, currently working for the Canterbury District Health Board here at Christchurch Hospital. Since moving to New Zealand, Ruth has worked for the last 10 years in this specialty, both independently and for a number of larger organisations. She's a past and current member of the committee of the NZNO, the National Division of Infection Control Nurses Association, and it has been an infection control representative for a number of national working parties. Ruth has also completed her Nursing Master of Advanced Practice, Infection Prevention and Control, and it is her research work from her master's that she's kindly agreed to present to us today. Welcome, Ruth, and thank you very much for agreeing to be one of our Weber Training Telecast speakers on the subject of MRSA, the patient experience.
Thank you, Jane, and hello, everyone, from sunny Christchurch, New Zealand. Can you please move to slide 2? My presentation today describes research undertaken as part of my studies towards a postgraduate master's degree in infection prevention and control through Griffith University in Queensland, Australia. I would like to take this opportunity to thank my supervisors, Ramon Chavan and Professor Wendy Moyle from the Research Centre for Clinical and Community Practice Innovation, Griffith University, who supported and guided me through the research journey. Most importantly, however, I thank those patients who participated in this research, without whom it would not have been possible to do the study. They kindly shared their stories and experiences of being in MRSA isolation with me. To protect their identity, I have used pseudonyms. The findings presented today will help bridge the knowledge gap between our understanding of MRSA isolation as healthcare providers and infection control practitioners, and the understanding of isolation from the patient's point of view. Please move to next slide. In this afternoon's presentation, I will describe the background to the research, including the reasons I chose this topic, how the research was undertaken, and the key themes that emerged from the data. I will then explore the findings using the stories that the participants told me. These findings have implications for patient care and the education of healthcare professionals. Please move to the next slide, which is entitled Background. Multi-drug resistant organisms such as MRSA are common now in healthcare facilities internationally and are a major focal point for quality and safety initiatives in healthcare. Some countries have introduced mandatory reporting of MRSA rates as one of a number of measures to reduce the high MRSA rate in their healthcare facilities. And in many cases, these measures have been very successful in reducing their MRSA hospital-acquired infections. MRSA infection is associated with considerable morbidity, increased healthcare costs, and prolonged hospitalization. There is often a lack of treatment options due to increasing antibiotic resistance. Consequently, we must make efforts to limit the spread of MRSA within our facilities. Please move to the next slide. I have included here a brief overview of the MRSA picture in New Zealand for any listeners not familiar with the epidemiology of MRSA here. In New Zealand, the Institute of Environmental Science and Research is a government-owned Crown research facility. And as part of its communicable disease surveillance activities, ESR undertakes annual surveillance for MRSA rates in New Zealand. As you can see from the graph, the incidence of MRSA in New Zealand has steadily increased over the last decade. A marked increase was noted after the first cases of the EMRSA15 strain were reported in 1999. This strain was introduced into New Zealand via a healthcare worker from Europe, and as experienced overseas, it quickly spread in our healthcare facilities. Up to this point, the majority of the New Zealand MRSA cases were the community non-multi-resistant strains of MRSA, and they were not associated with outbreaks in hospitals. In 2008, the annual incidence rate was 227.4 cases per 100,000 population. This is an increase of 18.8% from 2007. That's the annual incidence rate of MRSA in New Zealand. Now, one third of these cases were hospital patients, and the majority of them were reported from North Island healthcare facilities. Please move to the next slide. Nearly all published guidelines for the prevention and control of MRSA recommend a number of measures for the hospital setting. These include standard and contact precautions, which incorporate hand hygiene and the use of personal protective equipment such as gloves, gowns, and sometimes surgical masks. Patients are accommodated in single rooms or cohorted with other patients positive for MRSA, and restrictions are often placed on their movements outside of their room. In addition, surveillance for MRSA cases and prudent antibiotic prescribing are important elements of any MRSA management and prevention and control. Please move to next slide. This slide is entitled Literature Review. As part of the study, I first undertook a literature review of any literature or studies relating to the effects of source isolation. MRSA isolation is a type of source isolation, and studies suggest that it is not without its drawbacks. The findings from my review suggest that the patient's psychological welfare may be compromised by the limitations placed on their human and interpersonal interaction. Some of the psychological effects described in the literature include stress, mood disturbances, loneliness, anxiety, and depression. There are many reports of patients feeling stigmatized, and often the word leper is used to describe how they feel. Patients in isolation also report feeling abandoned and confined or imprisoned. Isolated patients do not always receive adequate or timely information about their MRSA status, and this leads to them being uninformed and sometimes confused about MRSA. More recently, studies have looked at the safety of patients in isolation and have found that they often receive less contact with healthcare professionals, sometimes because staff do not want to enter the room. Other adverse effects reported include delays to treatment, such as rehabilitation. However, some reports suggest not all patients have a negative experience of isolation. Please move to the next slide. The literature review demonstrates that patients in isolation for MRSA may require psychological care due to stress and anxiety over and above that of being in hospital. However, there is little mention of the psychological care of a patient in isolation in many of the published guidelines for MRSA, and even less specific guidance of how to address this issue. Recently, Coya and colleagues have argued that although transmission-based precautions, including source isolation, are necessary for MRSA, the patient's medical and psychological welfare should not be compromised by unnecessary restrictive infection control practices. Please move to the next slide. Slide is entitled Research Problem. My literature review revealed that both qualitative and quantitative research has been undertaken on this topic, but overall, only a small number of studies have been undertaken. And the majority of these have been undertaken in the Northern Hemisphere, with many in the UK or the US of A. From the results of studies that looked at the patient perspective of being in source isolation, it would appear that their experience is varied and multifactorial. Please move to the next slide. As an experienced infection control nurse, I am acutely aware of my role in helping to implement isolation policies at ward level. Although I had previously talked to many patients in isolation, I did not feel informed as to what they really felt about their experience. Therefore, using my own background and experiences and the information derived from the literature review, I was able to decide on what the aim of my research should be. The aim of my research was twofold. It was to explore the lived experience of patients in MRSA isolation in an acute care hospital in New Zealand, and secondly, to try and understand what isolation for MRSA meant for those patients. Please move to the next slide. With this aim in mind, I was led to the research question for this study. What is the lived experience of patients in MRSA isolation? This was the question that I set out to answer. Please move to the next slide, entitled Research Methods. The nature of the research question suggested a qualitative research design. Specifically, I used an interpretive phenomenological approach. The proposal was approved by the Hospital and University Research Ethics Boards, and the study was undertaken in a large tertiary referral acute care hospital in the North Island of New Zealand. At that time, I was working in this hospital as an infection prevention and control nurse. A number of different wards were visited throughout the course of my study. I believe that you need to talk to people to understand their experience. Therefore, I chose to collect the data using semi-structured interviews with the participants while they were inpatients in isolation for MRSA. I felt that if I had tried to interview patients after they were discharged, their experience would not have been as clear and as meaningful to them as while they were in hospital. Potential participants were identified via the patient management system, and the ward charge nurse approached them initially for suitability of participants. The charge nurse is a key contact as he or she could identify if a patient was both physically and psychologically well enough to participate. I followed up this with a visit to the potential participants to explain the research more fully and get consent. Interviews were conducted using an audio tape recorder and then transcribed into text. I was aware that some patients may tire easily, especially those who were elderly or who had undergone significant disease or operations. So I aimed to take no longer than 30 minutes at a time. I also had to negotiate a quiet time with the patient and their nurse so that we were not interrupted. This actually proved to be quite difficult to achieve in a busy ward. The data was then interpreted in a thematic manner. Please move to the next slide. This slide describes the participants. In total, I ended up with 10 patients who consented to participate. Initially, there were two others who indicated participation with the clinical nurse manager, but pulled out after I explained my study. There were four women and six men with ages ranging from 46 to 78. Each had a different clinical history, including cellulitis, 30% burns, renal failure, rehab, cancer, bowel obstruction, etc. Of the 10, 6 had true infections with their MRSA, and 4 were identified as being colonized, usually through screening swabs during that admission or colonized from previous admissions to hospital. When I visited, the length of time they had been in isolation ranged from 3 to 7 days. Part of the participant's criteria was that they had needed to be in isolation for at least 3 days. 4 had previous experience of MRSA isolation, and 2 identified as of Maori ethnicity. Please move to the next slide. This is a busy slide which shows the diversity of the participant characteristics. I have just shaded 2 columns to demonstrate once again the wide variation in their clinical picture. This is because I wanted to highlight the fact that MRSA patients may be cared for in almost any clinical setting and any ward in your healthcare facility. One of the participants attended the hemodialysis unit 3 times a week, so had a significant amount of experience of being MRSA positive in the healthcare setting. In the course of my infection prevention and control work, I had spoken to this lady on a number of occasions because she was not able to be cleared of her MRSA. She had asked to be involved in my research when she knew I was planning it, long before I even started the study, and she was a valuable participant for this study. In the past, I had also been asked by another of the participants if we ever took cultural considerations into our MRSA policies. This patient also happened to be readmitted during the research period and consented to participate in the study, which was great. Please move to the next slide. The transcribed interviews were analysed for common topics and subject matters, and what resulted were 3 main themes. I have called them being MRSA positive, being with others, and living within 4 walls. Now, each of these main themes interrelate with the others. There is often an overlap of the findings. For example, being MRSA positive meant feeling stigmatized for some participants. This stigmatization is also evident in their relationships with others, so also falls under the being with others circle and within their physical environment of the isolation room. Similarly, the participants' knowledge and understanding of MRSA also impacted on their relationships with others and how they experienced being in an MRSA isolation room. The overriding meaning of MRSA isolation for the participants that I studied was the perception that it put up barriers to having what we would deem a normal hospital stay. Therefore, the overall experience of being in MRSA isolation was one of being behind barriers. Please move to the next slide. This slide is entitled Themes and Subthemes. There were 3 main themes, but within these, the information was broken down into subthemes and to topics common to many of the participants. And I'm going to discuss these subthemes or common topics in a little bit more detail. Not every participant experienced them all, but there was some commonality. Please move on to the next slide, which is entitled Being MRSA Positive. This was the first common theme that I drew out of the data. Specifically, this related to how being in MRSA isolation affected the participants directly during their hospital stay. Most of them were aware that they were MRSA positive. It made them feel different, and this affected them in hospital. It particularly affected them through 4 different ways. please move to the next slide entitled Stigma. As was found in the literature review, one of the most evident aspects for the participants in my study of being MRSA positive was that they felt stigmatized. They felt this stigma by staff, by family, and by friends. And the stigma was felt in a number of ways. Some related it to the signage on the door. There was a comment about feeling stigmatized by having personal protective equipment outside the room, about staff not wanting to come in. The use of personal protective equipment by staff, especially the wearing of masks, and also when they found that visitors didn't want to visit or touch them. They also felt stigmatized when they observed or perceived deficits in their care due to being MRSA positive. Please move to the next slide, emotional effects. As well as a sense of stigma, the fact that they were MRSA positive also caused the participants concern and worry. Now, we all know that hospital is a stressful place in the first place, but this knowledge added to their stress, and their anxiety was way and above that of being in hospital anyway. One of the participants, however, did not seem to be concerned at all about being in isolation, and that said it didn't worry him or make him feel any different. He was an older gentleman and had an attitude of bringing with him lots of life experience that made him accept life as it was when it happened. However, for others, there were other emotions expressed during the interview, and these included anger and guilt. Some participants were angry for acquiring MRSA in hospital. Others were angry at some of the reactions they received, both from staff and from their family. For others, there was a sense of guilt when that the staff had to take extra time to don PPE to care for them and to do things for them that they would not normally have, that they would have normally done themselves. For example, if they wanted an extra drink or a cup of tea. This also was evident as frustration for them that they weren't able to do this themselves. Please move to the next slide. As part of being MRSA positive, the participants used coping strategies to help with this. For some, they coped with it by passing the time, and some of these strategies I've described later on. But if they were able to pass the time and not get bored, it helped them to be with the coping of being MRSA positive. For some, they actually had a little bit more independence in being in a single room, and this helped them to cope. One person described not having to check with the other inhabitants of the multi-room if they wanted to close the window, for example, and they felt that this slightly increased independence helped them to cope with being MRSA positive. Understanding of their status and what MRSA meant to them, whether it was their infection or their colonization, was extremely important. And it was evident with my interviews with these patients that they did not always have a poor understanding of what MRSA actually was. Another coping strategy for them was being able to communicate, and this was evident in the literature review as well. Communication was very important, whether it was having access to a telephone to speak to family and friends, being able to have access to a call bell, having staff actually call in and talk to them in the course of a shift. All these things helped them to cope more with being MRSA positive and in isolation. If you move on to the next slide. Knowledge. Having the knowledge of MRSA was also evident from the interviews. Now, as I said before, four participants had previous experience of being in MRSA isolation, and so they brought this with them, and having this prior knowledge helped them to cope with being MRSA positive. They all mentioned the media And interestingly, none of them mentioned the media in a positive light. In fact, one gentleman said that the media, if they hadn't read about it in the media, they wouldn't have been so worried. And this knowledge from the media can be a good thing sometimes, but it can also be exaggerated so that it causes more anxiety than is necessary. As previously described, their understanding as well from the knowledge they brought with them also helped with their coping of being in MRSA isolation. Please move to the next slide, entitled Being with Others. This is the second major theme that emerged, and I've called it Being with Others. Despite being on their own, most participants did not actually describe themselves as being lonely, with the exception of one lady who I called Anne. Family and friends helped, but they also refused to come sometimes. For example, Harry had three sisters who used to visit, and when they found out he had MRSA, they refused to come in. Now, Harry was one of the gentlemen who identified as being of Maori culture. This was very significant for his well-being, as the whānau or family is very important in a healing environment for Maori, and he was quite distressed with this. I even explained MRSA to the sisters, but two of them still refused to come. Having access to a telephone to speak to friends and family was, as I said before, extremely important. Now, the prime reason that we isolate a patient with MRSA is to prevent the spread of the antibiotic-resistant bacterium to other patients. One of the most significant findings to emerge from this study was the participants' overall concern for other patients. 9 out of 10 of them were worried that their MRSA might be passed on to other patients in the ward. For Ivan and Harry, who both had Maori culture, even their isolation, although it impacted on their cultural need to socialize with others on the ward, they believed that it was better to be isolated than risk passing on their MRSA to others. In fact, Harry felt so strongly about this, he made sure the emergency staff was aware of his prior MRSA status when he was admitted. Some participants were also worried about passing on their MRSA to their family or friends, and in general they portrayed a poor understanding of the risk of transmission to their family and friends. As a result, sadly, some participants rejected physical contact, such as a hug or kiss with their visitors, because of their fear of giving them their MRSA. A common sentiment expressed by the participants was that they felt that the personal protective equipment should be worn to protect others. They were worried when they observed inconsistencies in the PPE procedures that their MRSAs would be passed on to others. It was very interesting in my interviews with them that they noticed when people did not wear the PPE, they noticed when staff did not wash their hands, and they were concerned. It caused them more distress to see inconsistencies in the use of PPE than it did sometimes actually wearing it with them. In some cases, the stories that emerged about the impact of the participants' MRSA status and isolation on their interactions with healthcare providers revealed that the quality of their care was compromised. It was also evident from the stories that a lack of knowledge and understanding from healthcare workers about how MRSA is transmitted resulted in many of the adverse events occurring. I am going to talk about some of these stories and these events a little bit later on. Personal protective equipment is a barrier. There was, especially the mask, there was also a perception voiced by a few participants that some healthcare workers were afraid of picking up MRSA through physical contact. Please move to the next slide. The third theme related to their isolation room and their living arrangements, And I've titled it Living Within Four Walls, because that is what it felt like for many of them. They were just allowed to live within the four walls of their room. For some of them, their room made them feel imprisoned and closed in. For others, they accepted it. They felt that home was where they put their head down, and they accepted their isolation room as their temporary home. Isolating patients is an internationally accepted effective infection control method to prevent the transmission of this organism to others. However, unlike public health measures used to prevent transmission of tuberculosis or SARS, neither medical officers of health nor any other health professionals in New Zealand have legal powers to enforce isolation for MRSA. Thus, patients in isolation for MRSA are there voluntarily. Although most participants understood the reasons for their isolation, they viewed it as a confinement and were very conscious of restrictions placed on their movements outside of that room. Anne described being closed up in one room and shut away, while George talked about being stuck in your little room and kept away from people. Also, Harry described the loss of his freedom to choose to go anywhere as a cultural implication of his confinement. Participants also expressed frustration that being restricted to their room limited their independence in daily activities. Having to ask for a drink or to be taken to the shower if they did not have an ensuite bathroom affected the very small amount of control they had over their life in hospital. With only a small living space, the physical attributes of the isolation room is very important. One of the findings in this study was that with the exception of two participants, the rest preferred having a single room. However, they also wanted to make sure that they had either a view outside or they had natural light or could see the sun. Many of them were used to being on their own at home or just preferred their own company much of the time. And for them, they liked the privacy, peace and quiet, and time to think. They also suggested that they felt less isolated and alone if they were allowed to have the door open or if they could hear and see other people in the corridor. Now, this was noticeable with one patient who had been moved to a side room right at the end of the corridor, and so she never saw people coming and going, and she felt that if she'd been further up the ward, she would have felt less isolated. And two people definitely noticed when they could see the sun. It made them feel better if they could see the sun and see daylight. Only a couple of participants described being bored, and others expressly commented that they did not get bored. Common pastimes related were reading. Some of the older women liked to crochet and knit. They did crosswords and puzzles, listened to the radio, and watched the television. One participant particularly enjoyed the television on his own because it was during the World Cup rugby season, and he was able to watch as much rugby as he wanted. However, one participant also commented on the benefit of having the occupational therapist come and provide diversional therapy. Please move to the next slide. This slide summarizes the key findings from the research. So the key findings that I identified where the isolation experience is affected by previous life experiences and culture. Each of the participants brought with them different life experiences and different cultures, which helped them to map out their own experience. It also interferes with normal socialization and interpersonal relations in hospital. Isolation is a barrier to many aspects of hospital care, and it is disruptive. It is disruptive to the lives of patients while they're in hospital. However, one of the key findings was also that it is necessary to protect other patients. Please move on to the next slide, which is entitled The Story. Now, I would like to share with you some of the stories as related to me during the interviews with the participants. I have chosen stories that hopefully will make us think about our practice and how we care for our patients who are in isolation for MRSA. There are 6 stories from 4 different participants. So if you move to the next slide, entitled Home Sweet Home, and I'm going to tell you a story. It is probably one of most concern for both the participant and for us as healthcare workers and infection control practitioners. And this story was told to me by Joan. Joan was in isolation in a rehabilitation ward following a stroke. She'd been there for 3 weeks and she was almost ready for discharge. She had no previous experience of being isolated for MRSA, but just prior to discharge, we were following up on another hospital-acquired MRSA case, and unfortunately we found that Joan was colonized on screening to be MRSA positive. She was transferred into isolation room and MRSA precautions were put in place. Now, she talked about her isolation not being too bad, except that she really missed the company of her friends, who sadly would not come and visit her after they found out that she was MRSA positive. She found this quite distressing, and some of her direct quotes I have included later on in the presentation. Also, initially she did not have a mobile phone, which made contact with both her friends and her family difficult. She even described coming out of her room one day, going to the nurse's station to use the phone and being shouted down by someone saying she shouldn't have come out of her room, which was really sad. However, she had been living at a residential facility and was looking forward to going back there any day because her friends were there and that was where her home was. When I interviewed her, she had just had a terrible experience with that plan, following a home visit the previous week with the occupational therapist. Now, on the day that they went for their home visit, the occupational therapist chose to wear a plastic apron over her uniform because she had come straight from the ward. This is a practice that I probably would not have suggested, but it's what happened. So when they arrived at the long-term care facility, the occupational therapist was wearing an apron and Joan was with her. Also that morning, fax through the discharge had mentioned the MRSA colonization status. Now when they arrived at the home, they were met at the door by members of staff, literally with their arms out saying they were not allowed to enter the facility. This was really upsetting for Joan and particularly annoying and upsetting as well for the occupational therapist. She rang the infection control team to try and see if we could talk to the management of the long-term care facility, which we did. We rang there and then, but unfortunately they were not allowed to go in that particular day. So they came all the way back without being able to do her own home visit. Unfortunately for us, we were not able to we did talk with the management of the long-term care facility, but we were not able to persuade them to take Joan back into that facility, and she had to work at other arrangements of getting home. In fact, she ended up going back to her own physical house, which she had not yet sold, with lots of care. But her friends were still at that long-term care facility, and she had found the whole thing degrading, upsetting, and it was really an awful thing for her. So please move on to the next slide, which is called Feet First. Now, this story is from Eileen. Eileen is a lady who attended the hemodialysis unit 3 times a week. She also had diabetes and therefore needed to be very careful with her foot care. She regularly attended the chiropodist And on the occasion of this story, she was attending her usual place, having been there many, many times before. Now that day, Eileen had been at the dialysis unit and had picked up some MRSA information leaflets to give her friends. When she sat in the chiropodist chair, the chiropodist noticed that these leaflets were in her bag and asked Eileen directly if she had MRSA. Eileen obviously said yes, and then the chiropodist refused to treat her, saying she did not have the facility to adequately disinfect her instruments. So Eileen had to leave without her foot care and obviously was very upset as she realized how important it is. When she came back into hospital, she asked to speak to one of our team and so that we could try and intervene and get her able to have some foot treatment. We did. The particular chiropodist outlet was one of a chain, and we were able to speak to the team leader and the manager and work with them on a general infection control guidelines that would incorporate anything to do with MRSA. So she did manage eventually to get back to her chiropody, but it just shows and highlights how misinformation or misunderstanding and poor knowledge of MRSA can result in this sort of practice. Move to the next slide, please, which is entitled A Bad Hair Day. We have all had a bad hair day in our time, but this was Anne's bad hair day. Anne had been in hospital with an MRSA infection. In fact, she had cellulitis of her leg. And she had been there on IV antibiotics for a couple of weeks. She's an older lady, and with many of the older ladies, they like to get their hair cut and washed and set, and often have the hairdresser coming into the hospital to do this. The charge nurse had kindly organized for the hairdresser to come in. However, when the hairdresser arrived, she looked at the isolation room, she looked at the isolation sign, and she backed out of doing it. She actually, when questioned by the patient, she said she couldn't possibly cut or set the hair because she would have to wear gloves. Now, we do believe that it was maybe an excuse on the part of the hairdresser. However, no one pressed her on that day because she is an external person coming in, and so she left without Anne getting her hair done. Luckily, Anne's daughter came to visit the next day and actually took Anne out into the local town to have her hair cut. But once again, it just shows you what the stigma is out there and how general public perceive MRSA. And we could have worked with this hairdresser and explained, but we weren't available. And again, once again, it's poor understanding of MRSA. And Anne lost out. Please move to the next slide, which is entitled The Infectious Pen and the Sandwich. These two stories were sadly once again from Eileen, who attends hemodialysis, and they both occurred while she was undergoing hemodialysis treatment. She seems to experience many instances of stigmatization, etc., as a consequence of being MRSA positive. Now, the first one I'm going to talk about is the sandwich, a very short story, but one which once again shows a lack of understanding. While she was there, the trolley came round and Eileen bought a sandwich, which the trolley person just put on the end of the bed table. Now, it was an egg sandwich, and after about half an hour, Eileen asked the nurse if they could please put the sandwich, which she hadn't opened yet, into the fridge to keep chilled because she wasn't going to eat it for an hour. The nurse refused. She said she couldn't possibly put the sandwich in the fridge because it would contaminate everything else in there and then everyone else would get MRSA. I mean, absolutely unbelievable, but these were registered nurses and this was their understanding of the importance of MRSA in the environment. So she didn't get it in the fridge, but she did tell me about it one time when I was up visiting her. The patient also had a fistula, so this is the second incident that happened while she was a patient that she told me. So she had a central line for her dialysis, she was going to have a fistula formed. When the consultant came around, he asked the nurse if she had a pen, and he used the pen to draw on the site, to mark the skin where the fistula was going to go. And then he said to the nurse, "You can't use this pen again because I've used it on Eileen, and she's MRSA." And he said this in front of Eileen. The patient then decided, well, if nobody can use the pen, I'm going to keep the pen. So she scored a pen out of it. But later on, she overheard the nurse say, oh, she was missing her pen because she wasn't able to use it anymore. So it was, in one way, it was a good thing, but she still felt that it was, stigmatized by it. So it just, once again, and that was a consultant, I mean, it just a little bit over the top there. And moving on to the next slide, which is entitled A Scary Sign. Now, this is Diane's story. Please take note that although I have put a picture of a sign up there, it is not a typical sign you would use on a MRSA door. And I must quickly tell you, it is not the sign that we used in the facility where I undertook the research. However, it is a signage. And this is a story that just demonstrates how small things can make a difference. Now, some of the participants made reference to the isolation sign on their door, with a couple of them saying that it did add to the stigmatization. However, Diane talked about it quite a bit. She first became aware that there was a sign when her friends told her that there was a big, scary sign on her door. Diane had not seen the sign when I interviewed her because it had been put up there after her isolation was implemented and she'd never been out of her room. So she didn't even know what they were talking about. To her, there was some big scary sign on her door and she'd never seen it. So anyway, I took her during my interview and I was able to show it to her, which helped her now understand what her visitors had been referring to. She also at the same time wondered if signage was going to be needed at her home when she was discharged. I've related this aspect of the interview because it shows how seemingly small details of MRSA isolation for us can be alarming and important for those isolated. And if nothing else we learn from this incident, we should at least show the patients what is on the outside of their door so that they know what others can see. So please move on to the next slide. And I'm just going to run four slides for you to read. And they are the direct quotes from the interviews. And they are thoughts from the participants. And they just provide rich description of the participants' experience of being in MRSA isolation. The first one, as I said, is from Joan, and it's her words how she describes being hurt that her friends won't come and visit her because of her MRSA. The second one on this slide is about Eileen, and again, it's about the inconsistencies in procedures. She also made the telling comment that she felt that they sometimes didn't have enough information or confidence in their knowledge of MRSA to explain things correctly. If you move to the next slide, the first one is the description from Harry, how wearing protective gear makes you feel downgraded, contaminated, contagious. Diane, who had the experience of the scary sign, she also found it scary being told about MRSA. She felt that the way she was told was very abrupt and there could have been more explanation. She also was told in front of her friends, and she felt that that was wrong because she wanted to ask questions, but she didn't want to ask them in front of her friends. So it's important when we do this that we realise how emotional a topic it is. If we move on to the next slide, which is the third one in this, thoughts from participants. Anne raised the issue about readmissions. Now, we all know if we're infection control practitioners that they often are isolated every time they come in, unless we can demonstrate that they've been cleared. But this is a worry to some of them, and Anne was the one that felt particularly isolated. She really missed the company of people. She loved to be in a multi-room with lots of other women. The second quote here is from George. Now, George had a significant infection of his burns, and he had MRSA on his graft, and it definitely delayed his recovery. And he was quite angry when I spoke to George. His anger was still there. He felt that we hadn't done the right thing, someone hadn't done the right thing along the way, and therefore that's why he got MRSA. And he was absolutely right, and he had every right to be angry with us. And the final slide in this series of thoughts for the participants got three quotes there. The first one I've put in just to show you that with Ivan, he was this elderly gentleman who was very accepting of life as it was thrown at him. He was an older man, he was nearly 90, and he felt that this was just something else, that you just got on with it. Anne's quote again just highlights just being with people for her was so important. And the final quote is from Charles, and it reflects most of the other participants in that whole business about looking after the others on the ward. Remember, they didn't know anyone else on the ward, but they were still very keen that their own MRSA did not get transferred to others on the ward. If you move on to the next slide, that's entitled Quality of Care. Now, much of the associated literature discusses the quality of care received by patients, and some of these things were observed and measured objectively. For example, how many times patients in isolation were seen by medical staff compared to others in the ward. However, you know, I chose to talk to the patients, and this slide lists a few examples of a reduced quality of care as a direct result of being in MRSA isolation. However, the participants were also quick to tell me that they did not feel they were losing out overall on their care, and they didn't report that nursing staff came in less often. They were very keen to praise the nursing staff. If anything, it was more medical staff would stand outside the door. But certainly, sometimes they missed their cups of tea because the catering staff wouldn't come in. And one of them was initially refused to go to the gym, and then we worked around that. Sometimes they were treated differently, and the results were, as I mentioned once before, at least one participant talked about being shouted at or reprimanded or when they came out of their room to get something. So it wasn't just Joan, there was another one as well, which is just not good enough from a healthcare worker. We shouldn't be treating patients like that. And again, some of them did feel that there was a perception less medical and nursing contact, but overall they felt nursing contact was okay. So if you move on to the next slide, we look at what the implications for practice are. One of the biggest things is to respect the individuality of the patient in MRSA isolation. They all have their own perspective on it, so try and work around what they need, what their cares are, and what their own experience is. Promote their independence and control as much as possible. Try and ensure consistent infection control practices. This was an issue for them, and it is something that we can take away and work with staff to make sure infection control practices are consistent. Always consider the room and the facilities when putting someone in source isolation. Try and get the best room with the best outlook and an ensuite if possible. And work with other health professionals to ensure services are provided. Just the basics and principles of MRSA prevention and control. So those are with your corroborators, your other health professionals, to make sure people do not lose out. Now, recommendations for education include ensuring nursing and other ward staff have adequate training in the principles, obviously hand hygiene and standard and additional precautions, increasing specific MRSA knowledge of staff caring for MRSA patients, but also providing education for families and patients that meets the needs in a timely, accurate, and appropriate manner. so that not all will be leaflets will be useful. Sometimes you actually have to talk to the patients and their family. And moving on to the final slide, the conclusion. Remember, we are isolating the organism, not the person. And please, let us not make the patient or the client a microbial leper. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ruth. Actually, perfect timing and an actually fascinating insight into your research. It's actually really good to see qualitative nursing research of this kind, and perhaps it's something that we do need to explore more in the field of infection prevention and control, looking at the patient's experience. Your research related specifically to MRSA, but presumably some of the lessons learned and the recommendations could be extrapolated out to other disease processes. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, Jane. Certainly many of the other multidrug resistant organisms where people are isolated, source isolation for those, such as ESBL and multidrug resistant Cynetobacter, those sorts of things, it would be appropriate, and most of the findings you could probably extrapolate to those sorts of situations, yeah.
You mentioned at the beginning that there isn't much actually published on this topic in terms of patients' experience. So do we look forward to seeing this published at some point?
Thanks, Jane. Yes, I am trying to. I'm in the process of submitting publication on my findings to a journal, so we'll wait and see how that goes.
Great. Thanks very much, Ruth. In closing, I'd like to thank Ruth very much for her fascinating contribution to this year's teleclass. I think it's given us much food for thought regarding patient experience of isolation that perhaps we don't always consider. Don't forget that you can access any of the other Weber teleclasses by registering as usual via the website and either listening to them live or via rebroadcast or recording. I hope that you are able to consider joining us for the next session, and if so, you can register as usual via the website. Until then, thank you very much for listening in today, and goodbye for now.